6-year-old can hear thoughts, but everyone has to tiptoe around the boy and just say, "You're doing so well, everything is so good. I loved when you made that cat turn inside out." It was a terrifying video, very discomfort-making. I can tell a couple of you know this movie. I mean, the old Twilight Zone, what an incredible piece of filmmaking. Every shot is so well composed. But the message, although it was, I assume, a Cold War message, resonates just as much for the times when a person holds the nuclear codes and an active Twitter account. Well, I'm not addressing any particular people. The other thing, Karen, I just finished the series The Handmaid's Tale, which I look forward to reading in book form, which is about living in a theocracy. It's very interesting because you would assume that a theocracy would not be as bad as what Orwell described in 1984. I have to read the book, of course, but in my mind, it comes off much worse than Oceania and Eurasia and the countries of 1984. And the third thing, which you can all these are available online, it's kind of nice, was Jason Aldean's opening talk and music at Saturday Night Live last week. You may know that he was the performer, I think he was finishing his performance, when the shooter opened fire in Vegas last week. And he came on the main stage of Saturday Night Live before any other performer, visibly shaken but also calm and kind, and described sort of his speechlessness, I would say, in face of such horrific evil and violence. And the only thing he offered was that for those in such grave pain, he and others will share their pain, and will carry that pain with them, and that America can still stand united. And then, in an act of artistic bravado, he played the Tom Petty song, "Won't Back Down." Tom Petty, one of the other people who died in the same week, I think drawing together those deaths. I'm not a Tom Petty fan, but it was a brilliant choice. So, in reflecting on the holidays, one or two people have come to me and said, "Why didn't you speak more on current events?" All of my talks, it's not typically this way, but I try to balance the personal with the public, the private and the public. Really, most of my talks were about internal development, self-growth. Did I abdicate responsibility for speaking about the world? In many ways, I did. And I've been thinking about the reasons for that. And there are a few. I read a sermon by Sharon Brous, one of the sometimes rated as the most important rabbi in America. She was the member, she's the leader of a sort of a startup congregation in LA that's really reinventing Judaism and has a lot of ideas to share with us. They are highly politicized. And her sermon, I found, was, to me, unevocative. It contained very little Jewish message. It contained very little message from Torah, Bible, the Masorah, the tradition. Mostly historical analysis of anti-Semitism and her own personal political analysis. And it also contained a few prescriptions at the end. All of which, frankly, is anathema to the way I want to preach. I love politics. I'm interested in history and sociology, but I'm no expert. I read good journals. I read a lot. I don't read a lot of nonfiction, but I do read a lot of news, The New Yorker, The Economist, a few others. I try to balance my sources, but I'm no expert. I have no PhD in such things. I've never published a book in anything particularly current. My limited expertise is a bit of what the sages think about human nature and what that teaches me about God and ethics. Ethics doesn't have much to say on gun control, as far as I can tell. I need to do some more research. The other thing that bothered me is I don't feel like it's my job to give you prescriptions, to give you bullet points. I feel like that's really infantilizing the tradition. I feel like my job is to force you to think. Force is even a strong word, but to beg of you to think. For example, over Rosh Hashanah, what it means to be a leader. What things are you compulsively doing that you need to change this year? And the other thing is, I'm very reticent to be a political figure. I once thought about going into foreign service. I thought about political campaigns. Unfortunately, Bob Corker is one of the few people in Senate who are not as tall as me. Apparently, height is a very big requirement for being in the Senate and the presidency. Also, I need a good amount of sleep each night, and political campaigns are taxing. I've heard that from Mayor Burchett. He says, when he asked political advice about how to run a campaign, he says, get used to having the taste of stamps on your mouth. It's just a lot of hard work. Also that. And I'm a little afraid of taking a stand that some of you won't agree with. I mean, that's a little fear-making when it is part of my job to work for the whole constituency. But the real reason is the deepest reason is even worse. Well, I'm not there yet. I am genuinely pessimistic. And I genuinely don't have answers. I'll get back to what Jason Aldean said, because I might have that answer. I don't think we're going to see any sort of common sense gun control, even pragmatic laws about registering weapons. I think we are going to be increasingly living in an age of mass shootings and terrorism. And I don't mean Islamic terror, I just mean being terrorized to go to a synagogue, the mall, a school, a public event. As I described last week, sort of during an impromptu discussion in our sanctuary, in our sukkah, about gun control, I was at a Paul McCartney show and I started thinking, God, what could happen here? Since Charleston's shooting, we spend a lot of our budget, not a lot, but a significant percentage of our budget on security, which is not what I want this synagogue to have to do. That is the last thing I'd like to spend money on. We live in an era where I genuinely believe that climate change cannot no longer be averted. That we as a human race are very good at responding to disaster and very lazy and slovenly about preventing it. And the sad truth is every dollar of prevention equals at least $10 you could spend by FEMA. I think we're living in an age where we will not be able to mitigate the effects of man-made carbon emissions that affect global climates and sea levels. We will just be building levees. That's disappointing. And the people affected won't look like us in a lot. They'll probably be Bengalis. The people who die will be Africans who starve to death because climates have ruined their crops. And finally, I'm pessimistic about American democracy. I fear that we may be living in the twilight of this glorious experiment. Maybe not this year or next year, but maybe in my lifetime. That what's called the Overton window, the limits of acceptable dialogue, has become so distorted and distended to allow people to say things that were heretofore inexcusable, or at least as one of my favorite comedians would say, you'd look around the room and say something like, I'm not against blank race, but let's have a messed up conversation about that race. We don't even look to see who's listening anymore. We don't talk to people across the aisle. We don't talk to people who aren't in our tribe. I'm quite sad that John McCain is dying and that Bob Corker is resigning, because I suspect we're going to get someone a lot more like Roy Moore. I'm not optimistic, and I didn't want to share that with you over the holidays. And maybe I didn't even know it so clearly. And not only do I not have prescriptions, I don't think it's my job to give prescriptions. I'm very proud that I work with the Community Coalition Against Human Trafficking. I'm very proud that we're beginning work with Justice Knox, which is a community mobilization group. We're having a meeting here. It was going to be a house meeting, but it's hard to find one house. And that I thought would attract 8 to 10 people, that may be bringing 30 plus people to talk about what we as a community can do to address local issues. In the past year, Justice Knox has addressed mental health training for police officers and alternate punishments for students that tended to affect disproportionately students of color and students with special needs. But for a lot of these issues, I'm sorry to say, most of you are the wrong people to make the changes. The changes will come when people inside the tribe of people who own more than 3 guns, when people inside the president's inner circle, like Bob Corker, when people who have promoted climate change science denial, rather than discussing the policy and economics of climate change, which I think is a legitimate discussion. How much damage can we allow the climate to do to coastal cities relative to how much would it cost us to amend our carbon dioxide emissions? That's a legitimate conversation to have. Falsifying or ignoring real historical and scientific evidence is not legitimate. Calling it fake news is not legitimate. It's okay to have people disagree with you. It's not okay to insult them into silence. I mean, where does that leave us? You know, I think Karen and I were talking, there are local things we can do, but I don't think any of you are on the board of the NRA. We have some scientists here. What? Arnold was too? Oh. You know, I mean, there's things we can do locally, but somehow I wouldn't say it's self-defeating, but it seems small. The issues feel very big and very not in our hands. I mean, I can't imagine being a human being living in Seoul, South Korea, knowing that nuclear annihilation is closer than it's ever been, and no one in your country has almost any control over it. Hundreds of thousands of people will die in Seoul if there's a war. And they aren't us, so it's easy to forget about them. But they are God's creations just as much as we are. In fact, so I guess I will get a little Jewish here. The Talmud notes that man was created singly, that there was just one woman and one man in Bible. Whether you think that's biological fact or not, it's much more truth than fact. For the sake of peace, such that one person wouldn't say, my father is greater than yours, or my blood is redder than yours. Bangladeshis and coastal Indians who will suffer from climate change, South Koreans and Japanese who would be obliterated by a Korean Peninsula war, they are our brethren. Let me just get a little more further. We are all spirits and bodies. We're all unity. We talk about, in the parsha, nefesh chaya, the spirit of life, nishmat chayim, the breath of life. And tribalism and violence and aggression. I've said this again and again. The Yetzer Hara, the wicked impulse, is part of who we are. Judaism has never been naive about it. And if you look at sort of the intermediate portions of our parasha, which we did read today, when we talk about Lamech, when we talk about Enosh, the parasha is trying to understand the origins of material culture and cities and implements, implements of war and implements of farming, and it assigns those to people. And Lamech has the first song about murder and violence. And Cain, I mean, Cain's name means to acquire. Cain, Abel. I don't think it's that he acquired Hevel's soul, but just that acquisitiveness and domination and conquest over the material and the land, those are part of human nature. Our parsha uses all of those words. And we get intimations of a better way of life, that le'ovda ul'shomra, to serve and to protect. I mean, it's really funny because Christians translate that poorly, but what it really means is the police logo, to protect and serve. That's what we're supposed to do with the earth. And Ibn Ezra says that plants require rain and toil. We have within us multitudes. We have within us good potentials, the Yetzer HaTov, and yet I don't have an answer as to how to lift that up in our community, in our nation, in our world. It is, frankly, easier to do it on a local level, but I'm not confident it's sufficient. Before I continue in my notes, I'd want to go back to what Jason Aldean said, which I feel like I could legitimately say, and when I showed it to Karen, she says, oh yeah, I could see you saying that, which made me happy that my wife saw me and knew me. But he said, you know, I'm in shock too. We don't have answers. I will be there in the pain, and we will help you uplift the pain. I can do that for you as a rabbi. We can do it for each other as a community. This space, this congregation, and this community without walls can be a sanctuary and an oasis. I don't know if that will mean not speaking about politics within the walls or speaking about it in certain ways. I think you're going to see. I mean, I've been pretty actively engaged civically. I think you're going to see me at more politicized speeches where I'm starting to take more serious policy and even, frankly, partisan stances. Karen and I had another funny moment this week that we both, I think, would consider ourselves left of center. And so I've assumed that we were always in the same political party, but we're not. We probably vote the same way here, but if we were in Germany or France, we'd vote differently. She'd vote Social Democratic, and I'd vote sort of in one of the centrist parties, which was interesting. I finally realized why we disagree so much. So. She's a not a Bolshevik, but yeah. She's a kibbutznik at the very least. I'd love to call her a Bolshevik. It's a Trotskyite. It's a Trotsky. It's different. It's all, no, I don't know. I'm going to talk about two other things in the Parsha. And again, our tradition doesn't have prescriptions. It has comforts. It has challenges. Like Isaiah, it comforts the afflicted and afflicts the comfortable. Noach appears at the very end of this Parsha. He's not... The next parsha will bear his name, but he appears at the end, and it says that Noach is there to relieve the human curse. Noach's name means rest. Maybe that's what we experience together in this holy community, is a place of support, a place of structure, oasis, sanctuary that might fortify us to do the small works we engage in. I mean, we don't have a lot of, no human being, unfortunately, has a lot of discretionary time. You know, I try to spend about 5 hours a month engaged with the mayor, with boards, with civil service groups, but that's sort of the limit of my discretionary time. And that's fair. We can't all be Marianne, who seems to make hours in the day. I think she has an eighth day a week. And then there are a few places in Torah where this midrash is cited, but it comes first in this parasha, so God gives the human beings clothes on their way out. And in Talmud Sota, I think it also appears in another place, Rabbi Chama, son of Rabbi Hanina, added, we know of a text that says you should walk before humbly before God, your God. How do you walk before God or even God's presence? For God is like a devouring fire. You know, meaning like that would be dangerous. But what Midrash says is, as I, the term I described as imitatio Dei, the imitation of the divine, is just as God clothes the naked, so you too must clothe the naked, as in this parsha, and later when God visits the sick after Abraham's circumcision, angels come, you too must visit the sick, and as God comforts mourners, as God was there for Isaac after Abraham's death and God gave Isaac respite, you too must comfort mourners, and just as God intimately was involved in Moses' burial, so you too must bury the dead. Maybe I'll come up with an answer soon. I don't have one yet. I just would humbly like you to feel that your pain and discomfort and fear, frankly, what I reached the other night was an awareness that what I feel most of all is fear and sadness, grief. Grief for what was and fear for the future, which I think are totally legitimate. And I would suspect that all of us feel that in some way about something right now. Maybe what I can offer you, maybe what we can offer each other is a tradition that gives us warmth and grace, a pastor who cares about you and will attend to your fear and sadness, a community that will love you and give you gladness even when you don't feel self-love and gladness, when you feel despair. Prozac is good too, but let's look at each other with love and support. And then opportunities to engage, not prescriptive opportunities, but opportunities to come together to, as I said in one of my vision statements, to coordinate with local agencies, to create opportunities to serve, and to realize that service, public, political, social justice, social action, all those kinds of service are godly and Jewish. So I hate to leave my Shabbat talk with sort of an ellipsis at the end, but I guess that's where I am. And I don't yet have an answer. I think you'll be hearing more talks like this from me. I'll try to wed them to our tradition rather than have them be just from my kishkas. And I imagine you will see me engaged more publicly, and maybe you'll want to come with me on those trips. And maybe we'll find ways to rectify situations that seem out of our control. I don't know. In the meantime, go back and watch that Twilight Zone episode. I think it's season 3, episode 8.